You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome to New Retirement Radio here on WTCM News Talk 580 with the gang, a big gang in here today from Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
What, it is great. It is great to be here. Thank you, Ron. I said that twice because I wasn't quite sure I was on, but I think I am now. Hello, hello, hello.
You're on.
It is great to be here. Thank you. On Thursday, September 22nd of 2022. Amazing. There it is. Mm-hmm. If you are listening to the rebroadcast, it is a rebroadcast on Saturday morning at 9. Thank you. Thank you for those who are listening here this morning. We have a lot to discuss. And if you do have a question of a financial nature, our phone number, if you would, Ron, is...
is the 231 area code. You can dial and talk to us on the radio at 947-0023 or just shoot a text message to... 237-7855, 237-7855.
And it's always interesting, the questions we get on the text line. We'll do our best to answer those as well. But first, joining us is Heidi Cartwright.
Good morning. It's great to be here. So it feels a little like fall, like it could almost be fall today.
A little like, you bet. Our own RICP and Managing Executive, thanks for joining us, Heidi. She's got a lot to talk about today as well. In fact, she's going to almost start the program after the intros here. We also have Deanne Jennings, Director of Operations. Good morning, Deanne.
Good morning. Happy autumn, everyone.
There it is.
Deanne is in the cozy chairs.
I am. You may have to keep an eye on me. This chair is really comfortable.
She's just dozing for a moment.
And who's that guy over there?
Yeah, that's Nathan Prout, Director of Client Services and Assistant Advisor. Good morning there.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Great to have you, too. So he's going to be talking about some of the subject matter we have today, because it's about, hold your breath, not too long, life insurance. Ooh. Such an exciting subject. We were talking about this earlier in the week. It's life insurance month. Do we really want to talk about life insurance? And this morning, perspective, I was thinking, you know, we'd be remiss to not talk about it because it actually has significant uses for situations and occurrences that are a bit untoward, like someone dies too early. By providing a tax-free death benefit as a lump sum due to someone's untimely death. Tax-free death benefit. Also, maintenance lost. I've seen this again and again. If you need help maintaining where you're at, whatever economic benefit that person is helping you provide and or take care of can be covered with life insurance. Next, is there a key person or people within a company? We'll talk about that too, where there would be a significant economic loss. This is the only product, if you will, where you can pay a relatively small amount and leverage that small amount to pay a lump sum to cover that loss, where you can't cover it on your own, or you don't want to, or you need help covering it, as you would in a lot of other underwritten, if you will, underwritten issues. Heidi Cartwright, talking about life insurance basics. Let's hit that first, and then we'll get into the more of the...
more complicated stuff.
Complex, you bet. Go for
because
it.
We thought we'd start with the basics, because life insurance can really be a strategic tool in retirement and other situations. So we wanted to start with the basics, and then Nathan and Dennis are going to give us some examples of how you can strategically use life insurance in your estate and financial planning. So first, the basics, like Dennis indicated, it's a replacement income for dependents. So if someone passes away and they're the wage earner, it can replace those wages. It can pay off a mortgage. And as Dennis said, these benefits come to the beneficiary tax-free, which is an important item, especially if you're older and you have IRA money, but it might be nice to have a lump sum come to you that is tax-free. So,
And as a insert there, Nathan was talking about some of the low cost he's seen with term policies. It's crazy how reasonable those costs can be for $250,000, $500,000. You've heard it advertised, but $40 and $50 a year for some of those policies. So it's amazingly reasonable to cover that expense if you're young and in good health.
Right. And you don't want to overlook this, really, especially if you have children or you're married, because we have actually had clients who have passed away in their 30s and 40s and they don't have life insurance. And it's very difficult for the people who are left behind to deal with some of the financial challenges when that happens. Another use for life insurance is to pay final expenses. It can pay for your funeral and your burial costs. It can also help you with medical expenses if you had a long illness or something before you passed away. By having life insurance, your beneficiaries can help pay some of those bills. It also creates an inheritance for people, whoever you want to designate on that beneficiary form. It can establish an inheritance for them to help them in their future endeavors. Also, you can use life insurance if you have a very, very large estate and you have to pay taxes on that estate. You can use, your heirs could use a life insurance benefit to help pay some of those estate taxes and not have to dip into the actual assets that they inherit.
And that's interesting, too. If there are assets that are significant and they're illiquid and you're trying to balance out the estate because one or two of the children want to receive that inheritance, but they need monies to help possibly pay off the others. Paying off the others can happen through life insurance, through balancing out the values within the estate. So you've got a business that's worth $5 million and the balance of the estate's worth $1 million. How are you going to split that up? Life insurance could possibly be the answer to that particular question.
So that's where it comes into that estate planning.
It does.
Another use is you can create a source of savings, and Nathan's going to get into this a little more, but certain types of policies, you can build up a cash value within the policy itself that you may be able to access.
Now, that access can be interesting, too, because it could well be tax-free. Tax-free.
And so then we're going to talk about the types, and I'm just going to go through these quickly. This is the basics so that you can sort of listen to the other ideas and have an idea. Term life. Term life insurance pays the beneficiary only if the death occurs during the term of the policy, which is usually from 1 to 30 years. You may have a 10-year policy, 15, and so on. These usually are lower cost policies. Then there's whole life policies or permanent life policy. This is where you pay over a number of years to build, and it builds up a cash value. So it lasts the duration of your whole life, but also has a very valuable part of it where you build up a cash balance in that policy. There's also a universal life policy or adjustable life. It allows more flexibility than your traditional whole life policy. The savings vehicle or the cash value, it generally earns a money market rate of interest, or it may be related to an index, or there's a lot of different types of universal life. So those are the three basic types. There are many other types of insurance, but we just want to start with the basics. And so then I'm going to turn it back to you, Dennis.
Great. So what's interesting, I thought as you were talking, a term life insurance, Jill and I had term life insurance, I think, for the first 20 to 30 years of our marriage. Now that we're almost into 40 years, we don't have term life anymore. you know, I guess we've graduated beyond that, but it was critical in terms of helping to provide, if something were to happen to me, a lump sum at what I thought then, and it is even now a very, very low cost. So where, again, you need to provide an economic benefit to someone, if you were out of the scene, that can be a significant planning tool. Next is key person insurance. Key person insurance. This type of insurance is sometimes known as key man or key man insurance
or
key woman,
woman
insurance,
yes.
Or business life insurance. Yeah, now key takeaways. Key person insurance is a life insurance policy that you buy on a top executive or other critical individual. If that person, here it is, the economic loss again, would prove a significant economic loss where they're not involved in the business, you may decide that this kind of policy makes a lot of sense. Because obviously we can't insure everything, but if the loss of that individual, whether it's an owner or another key individual that's helping manage that business, you just don't want to think about the economic loss that that person would cause if they were removed from the scene. No matter what that sum is, think about it in terms of what it is you might need to help the business get through that period of time, whether it's a year, 6 months, or whatever. It can make a significant difference in your ability to overcome that. Now, it's basically, well, the way it works is the company buys the policy and then is the beneficiary of the proceeds should that person die. So they're simply buying that policy on you because your absence would cause that much of a loss. The process, the company pays the premiums and is the beneficiary in the event of the death. The company receives the policy's death benefit, as we discussed. So that's the basic purpose of it, is to cover that. It helps move all of this through in a very orderly manner.
So if you're that employee, you don't ever want to be on the outs then with your employer.
Yeah.
If they have a life insurance policy.
Yeah, yeah. Be careful there. You know, watch your back, right? It can also be designed to protect shareholders or partnership interest. If there's more than one individual within the company and it's a partnership and you see the benefit of that person and or maybe even those individuals and you want to fund them, that may be actually through a buy-sell arrangement where there's a written agreement that if this person passes away, the others that follow can then buy up their interest and pay off those that would normally receive that interest. You pay for that life insurance at a discounted rate in order to buy out their interest at whatever price has been agreed to within that buy-sell arrangement, and then those that follow can pay off the spouse so he or she doesn't have to be involved in the business, and the new owners then are those that follow behind within the company. So it funds their ability to buy out the firm on a very tax-advantaged basis and does it in a very legal manner. So it's written out. So there are always questions. It really tamps down a significant number of those questions. And if you're a small business, that is really something to think about. Do we need to fund that person leaving the scene prematurely so that others can come along and buy out that interest of that individual, buy out the interest of that individual? And yes, I see that hand over there.
Yeah, something else to mention on that quickly too is you can also build it into a discounted rate, assuming that that business wouldn't necessarily be worth as much without that individual if they were to pass away early. So you don't necessarily have to fund the value of it essentially if they were still alive. You can have the arrangement built so it's a discounted rate for the others to buy out that interest.
Right, and that may make the most sense because if that individual is not on the scene, then the business may naturally be worth somewhat less. So you agree beforehand, if you're off the scene immediately, how much less is that business worth and how can we fund that given the reality of that? Okay.
So basically, if you're in a partnership or you have multiple partners, you're really protecting yourself with Key Man Insurance because it will give you the ability to pay off maybe the surviving family mm-hmm. of the person who passed away, and maybe even give you some to carry on the business instead of having to close the business because you have to pay somebody out. It can keep going as a going concern. So that can be really important for partnerships.
You bet. Some great definitions of who these key people might be. Engineers, number one, difficult to replace personnel. Two, heads of product development, maybe number three. Leading sales personnel, four. Partners or co-owners of a firm, mm-hmm. possible individuals who might be key people that you want to replace. So the bottom line on this whole discussion is there an economic loss that you're going to face if someone's off the scene too quickly? This may be a way to do that. Now, we're also going to talk about retirement income, too, mm-hmm. how this can fund that. Before we move on to other stuff, let's hit Nathan. Now, on retirement income, you have an actual interesting example here. I think it'll help the listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, so we have a case study from Kiplinger, actually, for an individual named Jim, who is 54 and in decent health. A $250,000 whole life policy, like Heidi mentioned earlier in our life insurance basics, from a highly rated mutual company, has an annual cost for him of $13,805 for 12 years, which, as Heidi mentioned, is also not cheap, especially in comparison to term. But after 12 years, the policy is guaranteed paid up, which simply means he does not have to pay any more premiums. So this matches up nicely for his target retirement age of 65. From 65 to 70, he plans on withdrawing from his 401k to provide some retirement income, and he's going to wait till age 70 to start Social Security.
Because he listens to our show.
Right. You know, an 8% guaranteed roll-up is pretty nice. But starting at age 70, he can use the withdrawals from his whole life insurance policy to supplement his income need.
Starting at age 80?
Age 70.
Oh, 70.
Yeah.
Yeah, now he doesn't have to wait until 70. He could theoretically start at 65. That's another part of this. So given that he's trying to circumvent the limitations he's put on himself for Social Security income, this could possibly really step in for that, for Social Security.
How much does he have that he can withdraw or tap in the life insurance account?
Yeah, so assuming he pays his premium for those 12 years, the projected cash value for him at age 70 is $218,000 and some change.
Is that more than he actually paid in?
It is.
Yeah.
And he paid in about, $145,000 or something?
$165,000 total in his premiums.
Okay,
yep.
There it is. Okay.
But also, too, at that time, his projected death benefit is also $380,000
wow.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that has increased, again, just in case the die early happens. So it still protects you on both sides nicely there. So one option for him at age 70 is to withdraw $18,000 per year, or $1,500 approximately per month, for 15 years. Obviously, this is a flexible time frame. He can start that income earlier or later, as Dennis was mentioning. But this way, he can maximize his income during his active retirement years from age 70 to 84.
Hmm.
Also, these withdrawals and loans are not taxable to Jim.
That's significant. So think about this. In terms of $1,500 a month, the equivalent you'd have to draw out of an IRA would need to be, well, let's say at $2,000 a month, at 20% withheld, you're talking $1,600 a month. So if it's 25% withheld for taxes, you're down to the $1,500 right there. Yeah. That's not a crazy withholding amount. So that tax-free income is worth quite a bit more than a taxable income in this case.
Absolutely, and he does not need to repay this loan. Assuming he doesn't, you know, the death benefit will be reduced by the amount that he withdraws. But in this scenario, he pays $165,000, as we mentioned, total in premiums over that 12 years. However, assuming he lives the full 15 years, he takes out $274,000 in tax-free retirement income. Plus, he still has an income tax-free death benefit for his family at age 84 of $91,000. Hmm. And he obviously withdrew that $1,500 a month for 15 years.
Yeah, what's interesting about this to me is it allows flexibility. If you need to take money out of a guaranteed account, fundamentally, this is guaranteed in terms of principal. If you've got a 401k you're trying to draw from, and we all know what that's about right now, these things are fluctuating up and down a lot. Mm-hmm. If you don't have other sources of retirement income and you want it guaranteed as well against losses in the market, this can be a great place to draw from. Maybe it's just 3 years until the 401k responds or recovers. I mean, obviously you have a lot of different options there of how this might give you more flexibility in terms of retirement income.
Yeah, and it might not be an interest for a lot of people right now, especially considering how stable their 401k values probably are. But something that can obviously certainly limit your sequence of returns risk is a policy like this. And by doing this, Jim has also created a total benefit of $366,000. Which is a return on investment over time of 4.26% tax-free internal rate of return.
Isn't that interesting? Now, 4% is not going to light anybody's world on fire, is it? Really?
Well, again... The last week, it'll light a lot of people.
Yeah.
The last month.
Yeah, positive.
Light,
yeah.
The last year.
It's better than your 401k right now, right?
Yeah. What I'm saying is, obviously, that's not a huge interest rate where you go, oh, my gosh, I've got to have that. But given, again, that it's tax-free...
Yes.
And it's another option to draw income. What if you purchased it and 2 years later you pass away too quickly? Of course, then at that point it's worth that much more because you provided for your loved ones. But if you do need to draw the tax-free income, my gosh, it's nice to have options. So it just is.
The closing note on that, too, if you were in the 30% federal and state tax bracket combined, he would have to earn 6% before taxes to achieve that same rate of return.
It can also be a great way to extend the return on the other retirement accounts too, because you have that source to draw income from. So because you're not having to draw when the markets are down from market-based investments. Now, the comments always are, you know, that's permanent life insurance is not a great investment. In fact, even some I've referred to it as, you know, really pretty negative. But when you look at the numbers now, because the costs have come down, people have been living longer, they're able to, these do cost less internally by and large. They can be, again, a resource for you where you didn't have it otherwise. It can be helpful in retirement income.
And one thing Nathan and I were talking about before the show is how interesting this is because, you know, you get into your 40s and 50s and you're like, oh, I wish I would have bought whole life insurance, but now I'm probably older and maybe not qualified, too expensive. But Nathan was telling me, no, I mean, you can work this. This guy paid in for, what, 13 years or something?
Yeah, 12 years.
So, you know, if you're in your 50s or even your 60s, you can look at some of these strategies to provide a diversified channel of income. And that's another thing I like is, you know, not just your 401k or Social Security. This could be a third option. And then as tax strategy changes, you can decide where you want that income to come from.
It's interesting. When you look at retirees, the happiest retirees generally are those financially, are those with a pension. Mm-hmm. So especially if you don't have a pension and you need a guaranteed income from a certain asset, this could be a replacement of a pension-type income if security is that extremely important to you. So, yeah, that can answer those questions.
So it's pretty exciting.
It is. It is exciting
in
the end.
For the life insurance world.
Trying to plan out into the future, this can be a great planning tool for some, you bet.
Yeah, and something that Ed Slott, too, one of our favorites around here, always says is he loves this as a diversification option because who knows what the government is going to change maybe their minds on in Roth IRAs in the future. So having your Roth, something like this, just diversify your options so you can handle those tax changes in your retirement.
Yep.
It's great. If we have other assets to tap in terms of, client does, in terms of retirement income, it just presents more opportunities and can tend to cut the risk. As Nathan mentioned, the sequence of returns, having to draw money from assets that are temporarily down due to the stock market. Then Deanne's up next with stats related to life insurance here. Four or five of them, right?
Absolutely. We got four of them here.
Okay.
Forbes Advisor survey respondents were commonly unaware that certain aspects of personal history unrelated to health are considered by insurers when determining an individual's life insurance quote. Only 35% of respondents knew that driving records are usually considered. 33% knew criminal history would be considered, 29% knew credit history could be considered, and 23% knew a current bankruptcy is often considered. So there's lots of things to be considered other than health.
So make sure you're a good driver.
8 out of 10 consumers overestimate the expense of getting a life insurance policy, according to the study of Limra and Life Happens.
Hang on a second, Deanne. Can you imagine saying to the officer, "Sir, I'm just in the middle of applying for life insurance. Can you just hold off on writing that ticket?"
Exactly.
For now? Exactly.
Exactly. Right. They dig into your life here.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah. So, and I thought this, I'll say it again. I thought this was a really good stat. 8 out of 10 consumers overestimate the expense of getting a life insurance policy, according to a study by Limra and Life Happens. I've heard people my own age say, you know what, I'm not going to look into life insurance because it's going to be expensive. But a lot of people overestimate the price, as we were talking about earlier in the radio show today. You just don't know. You should ask.
And there's a lot of different kinds, and they all have different premiums and the way the premiums are paid. So you can get an illustration from your agent that can help you understand how that works.
Absolutely. 44% of American households would encounter significant financial difficulties within half a year if they lost the primary wage earner in the family. And 28% would reach this point in only a month. Think about your loved ones.
Yeah.
The percentage of American adults without life insurance varies considerably by demographic. For example, 22% of American women surveyed lack life insurance, compared to only 11% of American men. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, the primary wage earner, maybe, or also just not realizing that their contribution to the family income is important for its well-being.
I think sometimes couples just don't think about it. Sometimes the economic benefit of wage earning is skewed one way or another, but many times they don't realize the economic cost. I think I mentioned this here briefly. It's the maintenance lost that can be significant in terms of a family at home.
Mm-hmm.
If one person is at home, understanding how much benefit that really is, if you don't want to pay someone to or if you do need to pay someone to help cover those costs, that can be significant as well. So it's not just the check that comes in, it's the cost that would be incurred should that person no longer be there.
Absolutely. And 64% of Americans aged 58 and older surveyed lack of life insurance, compared to only 9% of Americans aged 18 to 25.
Yeah, and we see that a lot, too. People just let their term policies lapse. Mm. At the end of those term policies, the premiums increase significantly, and you might not be that insurable anymore after that term policy lapses. So even when shopping for term policies, it's important to look at the conversion opportunities that it might provide in the future should you want to convert even a portion of it to permanent life insurance.
So convertibility is a huge thing.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a good point. We did have a question in terms of the long-term care riders that are available on life insurance. And Frank, I was just thinking about that too. So you can actually purchase a life insurance policy with a long-term care rider on it. So if you do die prematurely, it'll pay somewhat of a death benefit. It's not significant because the major focus of a policy like this is to pay for long-term care coverage to provide you income if you do need it. Usually in the range of, what, 2 to 3 times or so what you place into it as a lump sum?
Yeah, depending if you're looking at more of a long-term care policy or more of a life insurance policy with a long-term care rider, you can structure that either way, really, with what you'd like the benefit to be at age 80 is usually when you're looking at that for your long-term care benefit range. Yeah.
Generally, what we see is that the need for long-term care rises dramatically for those who are over age 80. The numbers are incredible. So if you're trying to fund something with a lump sum where you're trying to cover long-term care out there 15 to 20 years, that can be a way to do that. And as you age, of course, then that long-term care benefit increases too, from 2 to 3 times to perhaps 3 to 4. Approximately.
Exactly. And like you're saying, Dennis, the sweet spot to look for those policies with long-term care is really between age 55 to 65 as well, typically.
Yeah, so. Which is everybody, including everybody here in the studio anyway.
Hey. At least. Hey.
Pardon me.
Pardon me.
Yeah, Dan's still in
there. Hold on.
I'll roll that one back then.
Just because I'm knocking on the door doesn't mean I'm there.
By the way, a text question here. We'll direct this to Nathan first and Dennis and whoever wants to chime in, though, because Nathan brought it up. The discussion this morning seems to be the first time I've ever heard mention of potential Roth changes legislatively in the future. Is there something we should know here?
Not something we should know yet, but I don't think any of us are going to try to predict what the government is going to do in the future.
But you're just saying in general.
In general, it's good to diversify your options, but certainly, the Roth is still an excellent option right now. So no, nothing yet.
Nothing that anybody's proposed or even mentioned that you've heard of.
Yeah, and that is a great question. And whenever we're teaching a class, what we say in general is never bet the farm on a tax strategy because it's always due to change. So the change may be minor, as in 2025, taxes are due to go up. They are due to go up in 2025 as a part of the law that was signed by the Trump administration.
The Tax and Jobs Act.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Allowed the rates to go back what they had previously been in back to those rates in 2025. So you never know.
They may or may not, right?
They may not, yeah. Given who's in the White House and who's in the House and Senate. Okay? So, man, change always afoot. All right? So we've got a little bit more time here. Yeah. How much?
I'll say 4 minutes.
Yeah, and before Dennis dives into his last topic here too, if you've been listening the whole time and you're like, I'm not insurable, this doesn't affect me, there are certainly other strategies that we can help you take a look at. So, of course, come in and see us if you have those questions or any questions related to life insurance.
Good point. Next, last point is split dollar insurance. This can be a way to help fund a life insurance policy where you're trying to maintain a key person within that company through helping them with, in essence, this is another way to help fund their own retirement. So if you're trying to assist them through funding this, through saving in a life insurance policy, this could be a way to do that. So if the key person, for instance, is already funding or putting funds or monies in their own 401k plan, this can be a way for a company itself to help fund what's called a split dollar plan, because there are no dollar limits on this. So they can fund, the company can fund whatever dollar amounts they want, help the employee, in this case, maybe a key person individual, fund their own retirement, but also then the company would get life insurance benefits, possibly depending on how it's written, if that person were removed from the scene too early. So it can fund the retirement benefits for the employee. It can also fund a death benefit for the company should that person pass away prematurely. That is the split dollar program. Now, what's interesting about it is that all these gains grow tax deferred. There is some tax possibly on what's called the insurance benefit within the policy, or what's called the PS58 cost, but we can talk in more detail for those of you who might have an interest in a product or strategy such as that. All right.
Are you noticeably busier or meeting with more clients now that we have a little bit of instability with interest rates, stock market, inflation, et cetera?
Yes, we're seeing more clients coming in. We're having more meetings, and we're certainly able and willing to do that. We've got the staff to help handle that, and we're, as we were discussing at the break, we're happy to meet with folks who want to come in and just talk about, all right, what are my options? What should I do? What about my retirement? Are we still good with that date and time that we gave as the goal initially? Can this still work given what we're trying to achieve or consider? And should we take some money off the table in terms of risk too? We're easily able to have those conversations and talk about what your options are given your specific situation. And our phone number, 231-947-3992. Or proutfinancialdesign.com.
All right. Call and make an appointment, or check out the website for lots of information where you can hear previous shows, etc.